Mr. Day, Reel 12. You were staying with the Akeeley and Terabassa family for quite some time. Are there any other incidents you remember, or is the next thing really when you left them?
When I left them, I was sitting outside the leaders' canteen and walking from the rail pier, and so we were going to join the partisans who were there in the mountains at Monastery. And we walked in the snow.
What made you decide to go with him? What was the cause of the decision?
Well, I've known Ray since the early days of the war, since 1939. We were great friends. We had the meet together.
But what made you decide not to? I mean, you'd been happy on your own, you were safe on your own, or seemed to be. What made you decide to move? What made him decide?
Well, he was with a chap named Bill Sumner, a man who I cured in Africa, Libic District. And he'd had some altercation with Bill Sumner in the fall now. And he couldn't stand any longer, so he decided to join Party then. And I was sitting outside in his cantina. I think why? And I said, where are you? I'm going to join the party there. So I said, anyway, I'm still going to get my stuff. No, I said, you're all right here. I said, no. Of course, I went to the Terabassas to collect my medical pannier or whatever, my medical bag. And they remonstrated. I said, what's the matter with them? They look after you and cook your meals. I said, well, they're not all doing that. So off we went.
So you went because your friend went?
I went because my friend went, and I went really. I think, well, if he gets into trouble, I better be there, and if I get into trouble, he better be there. I've got two better ones in this particular game. And it took us about 3 days.
What do you remember about the march, the walk?
Oh, a lot of it. A lot of things happened.
Tell us about them.
Each night we spent was somewhere different, but the main story concerns. And I think it was in San Ginesto. We stopped at the farmhouse in the afternoon, and the man said, the wedding has something to eat. He said, whatever you do, don't go to that place down there, San Ginesto village, because there's been a pitch back between the fascists and the partisans. So whatever you do, but surely enough, at night we arrived in this village. And I knocked at the door, a big oak door, and there were two ladies came to the door. We thought, well, anybody over 30 at the time of day, we thought were old people. I asked them if we could have accommodation for the night. They weren't very hospitable, but they said, would you like a drink? And I said, yes, we would like a drink. And they gave us some distilled wine, which they had made of some distillery. It tasted like gin. It was very, very strong. And they had cooked for us. And they put us in the store in pitch black, and we were both pretty well snickered at one. And we heard a moo, and then we heard a bar. And he said, do you know what's in here? I said, well, I don't know. He said, there's two cows, two sheep, doing blacky, doing pegany, doing feed, and two idiots. I told you French. He said, what are the women at home? Well, they've got lots of them, and they've got some bloody fascists. Well, we've had it. I said, well, that's out for the best, but no, they haven't. They appeared at 5 o'clock in the morning, it was just breaking dawn. We went back into the kitchen, we had some more of this distilled wine, and I shall always remember. We got out of the door, and there were two big placards. One that stated, there were placards at that time in Italy all over, because there was a fascist regime that collapsed. These placards stated, non dimentichiamo i madri d'Italia, which means don't let us forget the mothers of Italy, who are the mothers of many more nations and many more millions of mothers who lost sons and daughters in the war. And the other one said, to the Corey, you remember Giacomo Matteotti. You remember Giacchio Matteotti. Giacomo Matteotti was a communist who was murdered outside Rome some time before the war. I can't categorically say today. Iuduce Mussolini was blamed for it, but the widow of Matteotti disputed that and said that Mussolini wasn't to blame. Anyway, we had walked around in a complete circle. I said, this is ridiculous. all we've got to go is across the Ostrava to the foothill of the Apennine, and somebody would show us the way to the monastery.
That's where the partisans were.
The partisans.
Who told you they were there?
Ray had got to know this, as far as I remember. I had no information, but Ray knew about it, because that's where he said he was going, and he left Massa. And we walked across the Ostrava, ultimately, and John Conroy went, we hid in the undergrowth, walked across, the snow was on the ground. Walked through the shrubbery, the bracken, in the foothills of the Apennines, and up, got a figure. Carrying a machine gun with hand grenades and knives all around him. He looks to have knocked off a Christmas tree. He said, Kitcher, where are you going? I said, I want to go and join the brethren. And he said, a bit of courage, you know? Have you got courage? I said, that's a thing. Go away. I said, we're English. That's a thing. We don't get to have bloody courage. We're English. We're in common. Come with me. We went up the foothill, but we started to climb up the hills and the mountains. And the water was trickling down, melting from the ice and the snow, and the bells, and the sheep and the goats tinkling. And it was, walked up. Down the corner, we came to a big pile of bracken. And underneath, a man's footstool stuck out. And he said, that is what, in Italian, that is what we do with traitors. And I said to him, Camina. Go. He wants to sort of frighten. I don't think he was in a state of being frightened at that stage in our experience of the war and whatever. And up the hill went into Monastero. And there was a group of people, Italians, with a man with a somewhat disheveled bit of sacking round his head who had been chopping wood. Been chopping wood, and a splinter of wood had entered the upper part, not of the eye, but of the eyebrow, which was highly inflamed, and I asked him to get some hot boiling water, sterile water. I bathed it with some gauze that I had in cotton wool, and some antiseptic. And I got my forceps and I took out the sterile of the wood, which was about 2 inches long, which hadn't entered the eye, not just the upper part of the eye. The whole area was inflamed, pus came out.
It had been in there for a while then.
Been in there for, I think he told me to do it for about a week. And I bathed it all, took a splinter of wood out, and put a little bit of sterile vaseline, and put a dressing of gauze, and mint, and wool, and bandage, and I gave him a couple of aspirin and red herbs powder. I said, really, red, those are cast cool. Then he come with me, I took him to his house and put him with mother was there, he wasn't very old. And I said, I'll come and visit him, which I did. That was in 1944.
The winter of 44 by then. So you'd been with the other Italians
quite a time. I can't categorically state exactly how long I was there.
A year or so though.
Oh yes. And we stayed there about 2 weeks. These people only participated in the war in as much as they raided fascist houses, wealthy fascist houses, and stole what people got, or raided isolated German colonies. They weren't doing anything, in my opinion, to the war effort. And I said, one day the Germans are going to put 288mm on that hill over and blow this bloody place to bits. Which they did. But by that time, we had gone. And we walked back, and many experiences.
What can you recall? Do you remember anything else about the time with the. Did you join in?
I remember that there was a group of lads, the English, which had formed a pop group, as it is known now. They had a sort of...
At Monastero.
At Monastero, strangely enough, yes, with the Apennines. And Monastero was a pagan place. I think they were all the deserters of all the armies in the world. They were Germans, Russians, Italians, English. I saw a Japanese, Chinese. All the deserters from all the armies in the world. It was a pagan place.
And what was this group of? Do you mean like a jazz band?
Yes. We called the Bing Boys. I suppose Bing Crosby was sort of the idol of the pop world that time of day. We called them, nicknamed them the Bing Boys. And it was rather grotesque that the Indians would be in this particular isolated rebel encampment at this particular time.
Were there many British there?
There was one, he called himself Bill. He was sort of the captain. He established himself as a boss of the place. Yeah.
Of the British in the place or of the whole place?
The whole place, yeah.
So how many others were there? Was the group?
The British, well, it was Ray and myself and the Bing boys were about four. There'd be about six altogether.
And how many in all?
I couldn't tell.
And did you go on any of the operations they did?
No.
Were you asked to, or would, I mean...
If I'd have been asked to, I wasn't asked to. If I'd have been asked to, I'd have refused.
What, could you just explain why not?
Why? Because my main objective in life, I stayed alive since 1939, it was now 44. I'd had five years of war. And I meant trying to stay alive, not on going to some harebrained scheme to lead a fascist house and possibly get a shot at my ears, people out, and eventually get back to the British line.
Was it a bit rough in Monastera?
Yes.
Was there any trouble? Because that's quite a volatile mixture of people you seem to have there.
There was no trouble in the internal situation, but occasionally they were raised by the fascists who tried to get up to the village and they were shot. We have got photographs of the close of the village.
So it was actually a defended village?
Yes, they formed themselves a little bad. I think there were a lot of these people who did this. And
And the Germans, everyone knew where it was, the fascists, the Germans. It was just a matter of time, in your view, until the Germans did something.
That's what they did. They put 218 millimetres across the other mountain and blew this place to get out of there. But by that time, I say they returned to Massa.
So you were with them how long?
I wouldn't think more than a couple, 3 weeks. They weren't 3 weeks.
And then you set off back to where you'd been. Now, you said quite a lot happened on the journey. What do you?
Well, there are what we call the dogs. They're offertory boxes, places. And of course, effigies of the dogs. We are one. The Holy goes by and Genevieve Maxi, senior at the side of the cross. And there you throw your coins in. You're scrambling about trying to get terrible, isn't it? It's sacrilegious trying to get some of the money that had been thrown in. And we met a woman. She said, look, there's that woman there. She's got a water on her. I said, water on her head. No, she's got water on her head. She's got a big, because they used to have head scarves, which they used to roll up in a bun and put the bowl of water on it, carry the water on the head and roll off, she said. And I said, for this one. Senor, please, I'll carry that for you. About killed me, that dropped me on the floor. It was a lot more heavy than I thought it would be. And there wasn't a great deal happening because we got back a lot quicker than we went. The weather had improved. The snow was just about gone. And,
so it's moving into 1945, would it be?
It was late getting on now. It was still in, I think, in March 1944 still. Because we still went, we didn't go back until the September, or beyond that, 45, as far as I know.
So you joined the guerrillas in something like February 44, not...
Yes. Like I said, we didn't stay there long. And then we went back to Massa, and eventually the German army came up.
Did you go back to the same families?
Same family.
And would Ray go back to his village?
He went back to his family. And one afternoon, I believe it was a Saturday, I was up a cherry tree, an Italian lad said, Giuseppe, I sent you to the mother, have you heard the news? I said, no. He said, well, he said, the British have invaded France, British and American troops have invaded France, and the troops are coming up the Adriatic coast, not the Mediterranean. And I fell out of the tree, and I thought, it's not true, I'm not there. It is that. Of course, we stayed in Massa until six times that the battle passed us by and went beyond us.
What did you do during that? I mean, how did you evade the consequences?
Well, the battle did stop in Massa briefly for one afternoon and pretty well one night. They passed off.
And what did you do during that? What did the villagers do?
There was no casualties. There was nothing failing us, just surrounding it, as far as I was there. We took cover. We were very, very unhappy. We had visions of sort of getting involved again in a pitched battle and probably getting, be captured by the Germans because of the influx and the goings about of people. But it passed and they went up.
You didn't see any Germans?
Yes, I saw the German artillery horse-drawn pass along and also motorised, run by trucks. And I never saw any tanks. I don't remember seeing tanks. I saw artillery.
And what about infantry?
So infantry, yes.
And you just stayed out of the way? You stayed out of the way?
Oh, yes, yes. No point in getting involved. No, I've got to shoot backwards.
What happened next then?
Well, we left. Eventually, after some weeks, when the battle had passed up and...
Did the British troops not come through?
Polish. Under General Anders. I think it was a 6th Polish brigade.
So did you not give yourself up to them, or rather...
No, we set off to walk back to our own lines, which the British had were coming up from Pescara. Of course, the advance columns had got to Massa and north of Massa, beyond Massa. And the first thing we got was the British 8th Army truck, which we hailed. Of course, being dressed as scarecrows, we had no form of recognition, and he passed us by. It was driven by a Polish show. And we walked from Massa. The first place we came across was Furno. It was a big piazza, and all the slogans of fascist slogans, it was absolutely deserted. And then we went to Portosan, Georgia, and there was a sailing boat in the harbour, which now is a fantastic seaside resort, of course, and it was a sailing boat with a sailor. And we walked beyond there, right down as far as Pescara.
And where were you staying overnight? Were you doing your normal thing of knocking on doors?
I don't remember that. I don't remember knocking on Italian doors at that time, because the war, there was very few people about. The battle had passed over this area. The whole area had been evacuated. We sought refuge, accommodation, wherever we could. And we went from there to Pescara, and then from Pescara to Foggia. That was a marshalling yard of like the England crew. We marshalled up the area. And it had been absolutely devastated by American pattern bombs. The children walking about there, blind, one eye, one arm, one leg. It was complete devastation. And from Foggia, we went across the Apennines on a cattle train in trucks, open trucks. And there we met the girl who was pregnant. By this time we had got greatcoats, as is the normal thing that the soldier does. He acquires things. He acquired greatcoats, blankets, which we looked after this Italian girl, put blankets on her. And we went to eventually to Naples. We reported in at a beautiful mansion with a spacious wall. The commanding officer there, we couldn't salute, with no hat on, just dressed in our normal shorts and t-shirt, and no shoes or socks. And he said, he heard our story, he said, well done, see these men have a breakfast, sergeant, and whatever they want. We had our breakfast, and he gave us a cigarette, and had some tea, and I fell asleep on the lawn. And I woke up, and a beautiful girl was kneeling over me. And I said in Italian, "Ecco c'è, come si chiama? What's your name?" And she said, "I'm a Lindley." I said, "Well, what does I'm a Lindley mean?" And she said, "It means the past, means amiable." I said, "Great." I said, "What are you then?" She said, "Well, I'm the official interpreter of the..." As the brigade, what did you do? The headquarters interpreter. She was an Italian, spoke perfect English as well. Then we were asked to fall in to see the doctor, see that we were free from infectious diseases. So we had done a lot of killing in our time in the prison war camps, and I looked at Ray, and he looked at me, and we disappeared, went. And we walked up the Mediterranean coast, and got with the Americans, and they did. And we did some interpreting. We got with the military police and did interpreting. We ransacked quite a few Italian brothels and used our powers of interrogation, interpretation in English, Italian. And
raising Italian was very good as well, was it?
Yes. He'll tell you it's better than mine, don't you? Yeah. Yeah, then we went to Notre Inferiore.
Now, you hadn't wanted to get caught back into the military system then again? I mean, the British military system.
No, we were going to be, we knew we were going to be, we were sent to a rehabilitation centre.
Where from? After you walked in?
Naples. We got back to Naples, having left this divisional brigade headquarters where I met the girl called Anna Liberty, and went back to a place called Notre Inferiore, where there was a rehabilitation centre, which consisted of EPI tents, Indian pattern, Egyptian pattern, great big marquee tents. We were waited upon by Italian girls, and we did very well. We went for a swim. We did a bit of smuggling between there and Sorrento. We went to British ships, cargo ships that were stationed there at Naples, and they gave us, after listening to a hard rock story, this is Lyris, isn't it? They gave us tea and tobacco and chocolate and shoes, and we rode to Sorrento and put an Italian on the back, and then the Italian said, do you want to buy these? Yeah, oh, yes, certainly, yeah, sure. Brought a bunch of lira out, and then we exchanged and sold until we were spotted by the military police. And that was one of the things we did. We also attended.
Did you get in trouble with the military police? Or?
No. We got by that time with pretty good information how to keep out of trouble, believe you me, yeah. And we used to go at night to the San Carlo opera house, where there were people like Caruso had performed in Giulia, the great Italian tenor. So I remember Lily Pons, who was a soprano at that time of day.
When had you actually got back to the British Lions then, or to the Polish Lions? Do you remember the date?
I can't.
Roughly?
No, I can't. From Naples, eventually, we were, having been at this rehabilitation centre, we were shipped back to Liverpool. And we went to a cinema in Liverpool. And the film was called The Desert Song. That's true. I rang my father up and I couldn't get through. The line was occupied. Oh, okay. Sorry, engaged. Isn't it occupied to the Italian? Engaged in English. Yeah.
How he'd known you were safe by then, had he?
Yes, because in Massa, walking in Massa with Antonio, another English lad, who I can't remember, a blonde lad, and we were coming back from Anita's Cantina in a German convoy passed, and this blonde lad, he ran, which is the worst thing you can do, paying attention to yourself. And the Germans fired burst of stammer, which he fired his head, and he dropped, and they took him prisoner. Well, during the ensuing period I've been in Massa, we had exchanged names and addresses. He lived in Aspen. Got his name and address, and he took my name and address. And when he got took back to Germany to a prison of war camp, John Massey, he wrote to my father, my family, through the Red Cross, that I was alive and well in Italy, in Massa for my name.
So they knew. Had the Germans just ignored you? You hadn't run, you'd just done what?
I just stayed with Antonio, the old Italian, who I go and see his grandson now, a big friend of mine. Yeah.
So what happened when you got back then?
Got back to England.
You got arrived in Liverpool, rang your father.
We came back via crew. I remember asking, I think he was a rear admiral, what time I thought he was a railway guard, and what time the train left from crew to Derby. And he looked at me and he wasn't very pleased about this. Yeah, I think he was some admiral, the traitor sort of thought. Well, I couldn't discern uniforms. I hadn't been in for a long time. Yeah, and eventually we arrived back to the Midland Station. And Ray went across to the Army and Navy stores to buy himself some Blanco and talked with the Sergeant Major, who had given us a ticket, seeing the first night of the war, because we were young men, and he never left England anyway. And I walked home by the back street. I got some sufficient courage, really. Equilibrium, you know, from the streets, I walked on the back streets, arrived in the shop, fell 4 inches, and within half an hour I was back
Why did you fall full length?
Because my father had a step in the altar. He had a step which was concave, being used by people coming in and out of the shop, and he had an ink step replaced, which was a straight line. But I was still thinking of 1939, something 6 years before, and I fell headlong into the shop. And my father was distressed, and I got, he said, "Can you drive?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Right, will you come round with me?" I said, "Sure."
It didn't sound that distressed then. He didn't sound that distressed.
He didn't sound that distressed, you said. Sorry.
He didn't sound, you said he was distressed.
He was very pleased, obviously overjoyed at seeing me, but the shock of seeing his son after over five years of being away and believing he'd been dead, it was quite something. And he didn't feel himself, so he said, inclined to get in a baker's van and start and drive and go around.
Who sent you out, didn't
he? He sent me, and we went together.
Now, did you have any after effects of your POW and Italian experiences? Because some prisoners of war had problems with being a bit scared out in the open, that sort of things. Nerves,
yes,
stress.
Yes.
Did you have any of that?
Yes.
You mentioned you had to stay to the back street. Why was that?
Well, I think it's like, to my mind, it was like taking a splint off a fracture. While the splint was on, while you were in stations of stress, fear, you're all right, you could combat it because you've become used to combating it. When you got home, the splint fell off, and I could no more have gone into a public house on my own. I could have gone in with another like you or someone else whom I knew, yes. A train, letting off steam, it's like a bomb, and I'm easily up on the ground in those early days. Remember, we've been used to this thing happening for years. And that is how one tried and did got ourselves alive. We could hear a thousand shells come over or bombs come down. There was one, not that was coming nearer than the others, and you sort of instinctively knew that shell, that bomb was going to be a little bit nearer than the others, and you took cover.
And you couldn't stop doing that when you were in civilian?
Yes, I couldn't. No, I couldn't.
And what about your nerves and stress? Did it wear off quickly?
It wore off, yes.
How long did it take?
I would think it took about, altogether, about a year.
Did you seek any medical advice?
From my local doctor, yes.
And what did he say? How helpful was it?
As much support as you can manage. And that was great. Like telling a man who went for beers, drinking much beer. Travel sport, cricket, football, rowing on the train.
And that gradually eased it?
Yeah.